Right, I'm hopefully with a bit of help from Dave Sandberg this morning, I'm going to just review some of the prophetic words that we've had about why we are called, or why we as a church feel that we're called to Wiltshire, and what's been said previously. And some of you, I know, will have heard this because you'll have been part of it, but there's quite a few, I think, that haven't actually heard this, and I just thought, we thought it would be quite a good idea, really, to go through. But interestingly enough, I think that Dave talks about when you prepare the word, you also have to allow the word to prepare you. And I don't have to say that. I try to do that, but I don't normally experience it. Like when I spoke last time about money and stuff like that, I spent so much time researching about all the different views and how to look at it and stuff. I didn't really ever felt that it really sort of got to me. But this time, it actually has really stirred me, and I hope to be able to sort of tag something onto the end as to where we're going now. So hopefully we'll get some time to do that. Okay, there's quite a lot of words on the first few slides, and I'm not really intending for you to read everything, but this particular one, Hugh Osgood, is a guy who works as a minister in London. He has a particular ministry among black churches in London. He has an international ministry, goes out to various countries. I know Pakistan and Uganda are at least two places that he goes to. I went with him to Uganda about 10 years ago, and you know, he is very well regarded as a Bible teacher and also has a prophetic ministry as well. And our relationship with him has been very interesting because he said this sort of stuff. Now, there's some stuff here that I think is probably really significant for us. So he said things like, we have an unusual role. It's a prophetic role. It's to gather up prophetic input. The first words he had for Dayspring was about Wiltshire as a county. He feels that God wanted to say we're a church for Wiltshire, not just for Chippenham. So we're not really normally a parish church. And he has never wavered in that conviction. I think it's quite strong, these sort of words that he spoke to us, probably in the mid to late 90s, I think this is where we were really starting to, where he sort of was putting this in. He talks about the relationships, and he says the question of capacity is not just a numerical issue, it has to do with the passion, vision capacity, and felt from day one that Dayspring focus is, that for Dayspring to focus on a little area in Chippenham would have been in a way denigrating the potential that God's put in the hearts of this church. The capacity of the church isn't determined by its numerical strength. And the very bottom line, I see you as one of the most significant churches that I minister into. So you get a feel for the fact that Hugh feels that there's something going on with us. Okay, now this is 10 to 15 years ago, and he's saying this now. Oh, I don't know how to. How do I get? I'm supposed to put this on the. Alright. I've got to put the. There we are. Click the thing there, yeah. There we are. Okay, now we've also got a document that sort of actually details the history of these insights and prophetic words that have conditioned our vision. Now, you might want to be reading that, but as I began to read through this document, which is several sheets long on here in slides, is I noted this, that there was a great number of notable people in Christian sort of circles that are actually prophesying to us about this sort of thing. And there's Hugh Osgood, there was Dave Halls, there's Noel Woodruff, David Slater, who's a local minister, Nick Pettingale, Marion Sims and Sue Hatton were you know Marion, and Sue was a member of the church for a while, Wesley Campbell, Dennis DeGrasse, who's an American prophetic guy, Rob Warner, Phil Vogel, George Moyo, and Richard Cole. George Moyo and Richard Cole, both from Africa, and came over and prophesied over us as well. So it's quite, I felt it was quite a list of people who have prophesied into us about our call to Wiltshire, not just being a small church for a small area, but being a church for a larger area, and this larger area being Wiltshire. Okay, so we have things like, Dave had, I think, the one, every place your foot treads upon, and so he actually went out over the, you know, large area in Wiltshire and sort of got out of the car and walked around. We've got the things like Sainsbury's not a spa. We've got like Noah builds structures for conditions which don't yet exist. And I want to come back to that statement a little bit. But that's been one that's really, we've really tried to deal with over the years. Is you might have heard us saying, oh, we're trying to put in place things for things that don't yet exist, you know, conditions that don't yet exist. And I think that probably things have changed a little bit since we've actually heard that. We've got overview of a county, a very big work, thinking too small. So, you know, if we're thinking small, we're thinking too small. There's these things about, I'm not really sure if we're planting into peoples, not parishes. I noticed that some of the things you think, oh well, I'm not really sure what that means, but this one here, planting into peoples, not parishes, you can actually, well, I can understand that. I don't know if you guys understand that now, but we're not really talking about, we're just talking about Derry Hill, are we? And we're not just talking about Chippenham or Carn, but we're actually talking about people groups. So when you think about Cabaret Connections, we're not talking about a parish in the usual sense, but we're actually talking about people, a group of people who've gathered together. We've got cafe, you know, and then we've got Open Blue. We'd probably go more, if you like, into the... we are planting into, well, not planting, but we're actually reaching into people who are in different places, so people groups, so like the army people, the traveller people, you know, in another local community. You could argue they are parishes in a way, so, you know, it might not fully fit. Then there's some location issue things that you can have a little look there. One of the things was Wake Up Sleepy City. We'll come back to that in a moment, because Chippenham is a place, I'll show you some pictures in a minute, of Chippenham being a place where if you have insomnia, you know, you can actually you can learn to fall asleep quite quickly in Chippenham, and we looked at that. So we get olives. That's Andrew Cannings, who was suggesting that if we put effort into one thing, we tend to find that something else bears fruit, which probably is annoying, really, in a sense, that you're doing that. We also had some things like this. Our distinctive as a church is that we are able to operate in wide open spaces. Okay? Now, a wide open space being the rural community, really. We're not really looking at us working in cities and dealing with sort of city situations. We're distinctly able to operate in our wide open areas. We do have this overview of the county, which is involved with prayer and intercession. It's a large work, and where every place we are, foot has trod, that's where, you know, we get that sense that God's giving us ground, if you like, or giving us space. We're looking at people groups, not localities. I don't know if I've got... This image actually illustrates putting in place structures for situations or conditions that do not yet exist. This is the A350, and there is a single... it's a single carriageway road, but actually there are two arches on the bridge ready for it to be converted into a dual carriageway, which I don't know, it must be 10 or 15 years old, that photo, and it's still like that. So it hasn't happened yet, but at some point somebody's going to build the road, but the arch is already there for it. This is some other prophetic input. So we, on the top there, things that take 6 years will only take 6 months. There's a real sense of revival coming, and things things where we'd worked and worked and worked and things have moved very slowly, that there would be a sense that things are moving faster. I'm not sure what's happened with that. Some of these things you probably have to leave a little bit. John Noble prophesied about, that's another name actually that I hadn't mentioned, so about us being a resource church, in other words being able to have resources that would be able to be shared with other Christians and other groups. I had this whole thing about planting trees, which I'll share with you in a little while, which is probably, in the end, I think is probably about things take a heck of a long time to grow. And then there's the George Moyo thing, which is, and his, the three little bullet points underneath that is what George Moyo was saying. So it's reaching your destiny, we've got an apostolic base, and leaders from bigger churches will ask us for help. That hasn't happened yet. The last one, I think that maybe the apostolic base has actually sort of happened in a way. We've got a base. I'm not sure if we've reached our destiny, or I'm not quite sure what our destiny is in that sense. I haven't looked at it in any more detail. But and then we've got this thing, singing to the well, which I think I've got an image for that. We did quite a lot of this. And so here we have, I don't know if you saw the news recently, but Tilshead, a little village out on Salisbury Plain, suffered flooding when there wasn't any rain. Okay, it had rained hard and Tilshead had not been flooded. But it came up on the news about a week after the heavy rain, and people were saying, oh, we thought we'd escaped all the floods, everything like that, and then we noticed our carpet was getting wet. And they found that the springs in Tilshead on this particular bit, there's a road, there's houses next to the road, and the hill is just a gentle hill behind it. But the springs were coming up either under the houses or in their gardens. And as I drove through Tilshead a couple of weeks ago, and you could see the water just running down people's drives. It hadn't been raining for 2 or 3 days, or you know, 7 or 5 days or whatever, but the water's still running out there because the springs are coming up. And we talk quite a lot about spring up, O well. There's a verse in Numbers 11, I think it was, singing to the well and asking the well of God to spring up so that we could actually see the Spirit of God move across the county. And so we did go out, did quite a lot of sort of praying and prophesying over that. Now, Varian was an artistic sort of guy, moved in the prophetic as well, and he drew this picture which shows a range of high places in Wiltshire with the finger of God sort of pointing over it. And so we've got Swindon, Chippenham, Marlborough, we've got something to the left of Marlborough, we don't know what that is, but it could possibly be Westbury, and then we've got Devizes and Warminster and Salisbury. And so it was just sort of saying, look, God's calling you again to the county. We had to have a visual thing about the perhaps the important places that we ought to look at. Was it Khan? Oh, right, okay, thanks. then we did some work, actually. This is some of our prophetic work that we were doing about being called to a county. So that's Philippa there, working on a sort of a map of Wiltshire and Andy Canning's. I don't know what he is talking about there, but just behind, to the left of him, it looks like he's got a cake or something, doesn't it? Or a packet of nuts. I don't really know what that is. But just behind him, to the left, you can see we've made this structure, which is basically in the shape of Wiltshire, and we were using it to sort of pray prophetically over Wiltshire. And that's Funmi in the middle. I don't know who the guy with chicken legs on the right is. So Philip was laughing there, and he like so. We were really trying to actually grab a hold of what we felt God was saying to us about the county of Wiltshire, and we were just really, really trying very hard, I think, to actually grab a hold of what God was saying. If you imagine that we've had these prophetic words about the county and stuff, and being called to the county, and we've got to do something, then we really were actually really trying to engage very hard with this issue and saying, okay, God, well, what do you mean? You know, what does it actually mean for bums on seats or vehicles on the road or groups or churches or people becoming Christians or, you know, social action work or whatever. We looked at the whole thing and we rumbled around it a lot and prayed hard. This one, I've written it. I've written it at the bottom what it says. I think it says, if you're troubled with sleeplessness, come to Chippenham. Because that's basically what happens in Chippenham. People just sort of fall asleep. Well, we noticed that as we tried to do something, that actually people got inordinately tired and sleepy and didn't really, you know, started to feel they had a lot of inertia. And we felt we had to really work through that. So that word, wake up, sleepy city, which you saw earlier for Chippenham, was really quite an important one. You know, we are called to wake up Wiltshire. We're called to actually, you know, give it a bit of a shake and say, come on guys, you know, you've got to wake up and listen to what's going on. I don't know if that's my last one. Oh no, there we are. Actually, Varian drew this picture about it. Which, you know, I find the pictures help a lot, really, because it just sort of, you know, we really prayed into that, too. And we really tried to, you know, have a real good go at that. Now, my personal story about being called to Wiltshire is, it goes a bit like this. I was at a church, Philippa and I were married, and we've been in a church in Milton Keynes for about 5 years. And We sort of didn't, the first 2 or 3 years there were good, and then the last couple of years we sort of started to not quite see eye to eye with things. And so in the end I got a job over in Wiltshire, and I've always said we ran away to Wiltshire. Okay, so we just ran here, we didn't really have any sense of God on it in that sense, I don't think. I mean, I think God did, but we didn't have any of that sort of feel. We just ran off. We didn't really want to be in that situation. And over a period of time, God's sort of done something in me. There was a morning when I was driving to work where God said to me, raise your eyes to Wiltshire. And it was very, very clear. And then there was something else as I got closer into work where he said, centres of excellence. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not really sure what these things mean. And I got into work and the deputy head of sixth form said, look, your A-level results haven't been very good. The head wanted to cancel your course and not run it. He said, but we've argued with him and said, it's okay, you can keep running your sixth form course, but you need to visit some centres of excellence. And I felt that was a real confirmation of what God, you know, that it was actually God speaking to me, not just about centres of excellence, but also raise your eyes to Wiltshire. Not that I knew what those sort of things meant. This was before I was part of Dayspring. So, 2 years afterwards, I'd visited centres of excellence for school and teaching and so on, and we, instead of being at the bottom of the pile in the A-levels, we were at the top of the pile. So I really felt that God had sort of vindicated the whole thing. You know, he'd given me a prophetic word that sort of saved me in my work area, and he'd also given me a prophetic word of raise your eyes to Wiltshire, which I still had no real clue what to do about. But I did in the end feel called to, you know, sort of did actually feel, okay, I've got to do something with this. And when I joined, when we came to Dayspring, it was one of the things that really connected me up with Dave. I know that other people have different ways of connecting up with Dayspring. For me, you see, it's quite a clear visionary type of thing. But I know that, for instance, Dave Sandberg, who's, I'm going to get you to say now, Dave, has got a different sort of way of connecting in to the church. And I just wanted to, I'll just hand over to him so he tells his personal story about how he does that.
Right, I guess for me, I really need to go back to sort of my mid-teens. I was really thinking and praying and asking God what I was to do with my life, what he wanted me to do. I was thinking about the things I enjoyed doing, what I wanted to do and that kind of thing. And as many of you are aware, my parents were missionaries in Brazil, and at the time, whether arrogantly or not, and being young and thing, I sort of felt that going abroad and being a missionary, I could do that. That wouldn't be a problem. Whether any missionary society would have had me is another question. But I really felt that God said, no, I want you to stay in the UK and I want you to serve me in the UK. And so I began to consider what I should do and where I should go and the kind of things. And at the time I felt that it was right that I should study mechanical engineering at university and I should look to find a job within that field and serve God in the church and in things sort of within my work as well as in my spare time and that kind of thing. This was late 80s, and at the time a lot of companies were looking to encourage engineering, and so they were providing sponsorship and that kind of thing for a university. And so I did look very hard at that, and the school I was at said that while it was difficult to get sponsorship, it was possible, but you would sort of need to apply to 30 companies, you get 6 or 7 interviews and you get one offer. I arrived at university without sponsorship. I'd applied to something like 18 companies. I'd had 7 or 8 interviews. I hadn't had an offer. And I wasn't really sure whether I was going to get sponsorship or not. But on the first day at university, the university said some companies haven't filled their sponsorship programs. They've written in and said if there are any first-year students who'd like to apply, they will consider them for sponsorship. So I went to the board, I had a look. There was a whole list of, or a whole load of companies on there. I think there were 6 or 7. But we had to go upstairs in the building and around the corner and things, sort of 2-3 minute walk away to the admin office to pick up the application forms and that kind of thing. So I wandered up, got to the admin office, and I said to them, I'm interested in the sponsorship. They said, which companies do you want particularly? And I thought they'd have a list of the companies and I'd be able to pick them off there. So I hadn't really made a note of the company I was interested in. And not wanting to look a little bit stupid having not done that, I just picked the 2 names I could remember, one of which was Land Rover. I was interested in cars. It was a big company. I obviously knew that. The other was Avon. And I only knew of it because as I grew up, ding dong, Avon calling, Avon Cosmetics. that's why it stuck in my mind. It turned out it wasn't the cosmetics company. It was what's known in Wiltshire as the Avon, and it was Avon Rubber PLC. I don't think I completed the application form for Land Rover, probably because it was too long and difficult. But I can't remember, I think I may have only had to write to Avon. I wrote to them, and they had me down for an interview, and they offered me a sponsorship. And so that summer, I came and worked for 10 weeks in Avon. I was actually working at the factory in Bumpers Farm in Chippenham. And that was where I began to make friends. Just before Christmas, I went off to see Skyfall with a group of friends that I made that first summer. I don't see them as much as I'd like to, but there is a friendship there that I made right at the beginning there. I was living in Corsham. I went to one of the churches there. I have to say, the first Sunday I wasn't particularly impressed with the church service for a number of reasons. And I remember sitting in the pew at the end and saying to God, I said, if I get out the door with no one speaking to me, I'm not coming back to this church. And immediately 5 people descended on me and said, it's good to see you. How are you doing today? And welcome to the church. So I took that as a bit of a hint that I should stay. And during that summer, and then I did a year out, a year later, I was really involved in the church. I made a real great group of friends. Within that church at that time, there must have been 15 to 20 young people, sort of aged 15 through to about what I was, 21, 22. And I had a great year out. I also swam for Chippenham Swimming Club. And so as well as doing the work and enjoying that, I was getting to know people and taking part in the community and really finding a home here. I went back to university. It was about 92. There was a bit of a recession on, and I remember at one point having applied to a few companies and had some interviews and not got a job, thinking, why did I go to university? I could have walked into a job at the end of my A-levels, and now the economy's taken a bit of a dip. Lots of friends were applying to sort of 30, 40, 50 companies and struggling to get a job. Many of the people I graduated with took a year to actually find a job following graduation. It was very, very difficult at the time. But in the Easter of my final year, I got a phone call from Avon, and they said there were 2 opportunities where they were looking for people. One of them was a new joint venture they set up with an American company. It would involve 9 months training in Florida. And then I'd be coming back to be based in Melksham. Was I interested? No, I didn't. I said, yes, I think I'll go for that. I was interviewed for both of the roles, and within a week I'd been offered the job that involved the training in Florida. And I remember they contacted my parents because that was the easy way to get hold of me. I was back up at university. I had a message to ring home. I spoke to my mum. She said, you've been offered the job. And it was too late to get in contact with Avon. I was going to have to wait until the next morning to ring them. And that evening, I really did think quite hard. I didn't have a real sense of peace about the job and the role. I went to see a good friend of mine, a Christian, to talk it through. He wasn't in. I left a note saying I'd been offered the Florida job. And then I took a bit of a walk around Loughborough just thinking and praying about it. My friend said when he got home and saw the note on his door, he thought, wow, great, Dave's got the job. But I wasn't entirely sure. I had this thing about being in the UK and that kind of thing. And I was really quite looking forward to coming back to Wiltshire because of what happened in the year out and that kind of thing. In the end, I took the job. Even to this day, I'm not sure whether I should have turned it down or not, but I took the job. I did 9 months in Florida, came back. I was then based in working in Melksham. I was living back in Corsham. I was again digging in with the friends I made. I was part of that church again, and really enjoying it. They were saying to me, how long are you around for? I said, oh, for the foreseeable future. And within 9 months I was moved to Wales, because they moved the factory from Melksham to Wales. And within 3 months following that, I then was put into a role which meant I had to relocate to Germany. And I think I've said before, again, you know, with all the thing about the UK and all of this, I wasn't entirely comfortable going to Germany. I perhaps wasn't brave enough to say, no, I want to stay in the UK, find me a job based here. So I took it. I remember the first few days, new country, I didn't know a lot of German and all of that kind of thing, and it was quite daunting, and I didn't really have a real sense of peace about it. Anyway, I worked there for over 3 years. While I was there, I'd obviously come back to the UK fairly regularly. I'd see my parents, and as often as I could, I'd be jumping in a car and driving down to Wiltshire to catch up with the friends that I'd made in that. And it was while I was doing that, once I was just leaving and saying goodbye to my mum, and my mum said, you live in Germany, but your home is in Wiltshire. Mm-hmm. And that to me was something that really, I thought, yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And so towards the end of my time in Germany, Sue and I we'd been at university together. We connected up again and started going out, and I started looking at jobs within the UK and where I should work. And by then Avon had sold the company I was working for in Germany. So I was working for an American company. So I talked to Avon again, and I got this role at the Chippenham factory. I was offered the job. Sue and I talked about it a fair amount. Her dad was CEO of the company, which has advantages and also disadvantages. And also Sue had always said she was never coming back to Wiltshire, because her dad was so well known being working for the Avon and that kind of thing. But I had a real sense of peace about it, and I felt it was the right thing to do. I think I've told you all before that I was on a 3 month notice period, and during that 3 months the role that I was going to take in Avon was changed, so in effect I had a promotion before I even started, because they did a bit of reorganisation, and I felt that was a real confirmation for that. So we moved back to moved back to the UK. I was in Wiltshire, really settled in. Sue and I started coming to Dayspring. We obviously decided to get married and all of that. And the whole thing with the vision for Wiltshire and the way Dayspring operates and all of that, I really, really was something I felt I could get behind and really sign up to and to work with. And so it's something that has got on from there. And during my time at Avon, I was probably headhunted, or had headhunt people ring me up offering me jobs probably every year. Sometimes they come in, you know, I get two or three phone calls and then nothing for a while. And very quickly I was saying, you know, first they say, oh, we've got this great opportunity for you, we hear you're a great guy and all of those nice things. And I say, where's it based? Oh, Yorkshire. I said, I'm not moving out of Wiltshire. And quite quickly they learned, and so then they used to say, ah, Salisbury. So they'd learned that I wasn't moving. But I stayed with Avon, and out of that I then began, felt called to work full time for Dayspring, and I'm where I am now.
Thanks, Dave. I don't think I've heard that story in all that entirety before. That was really good. That was Sue saying, I haven't either. Yeah. The other person that I did want to give their story was Carol this morning, and I've got her story, which is much quicker because I'm going to say it. Which basically, I don't know if you know, Carol grew up in London, and the reason that she ended up in Wiltshire was because she'd become a Christian and she got involved in the church which Dave and Wendy were running. And when Dave and Wendy said they were coming out to Wiltshire, Carol went, yeah, I'll come in with you. I think that's true, isn't it, Wendy? Yeah. But Carol cites something quite similar to Dave in a way, but a different circumstance, but comes with the same sort of thing. There was a point, apparently, where Dave was being offered a job that would mean he'd have to move to Milton Keynes. And Carol had obviously followed out of London, Dave and Wendy, got here to Wiltshire, but she said at that point, she went, yeah, but I ain't moving. I'm here. This is where I'm meant to be. And so you get this point of realisation, I think, rather like Dave, you know, with his mum saying, yeah, you might live in Germany, but your home's in Wiltshire. I think Carol came to that realisation, you know, that, ah, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so you get that sort of thing. I asked them both whether they like being in Wiltshire, because, you know, you've got this impression sometimes about, I think it's a wrong impression, but, you know, God calls us to places that we don't necessarily like, you know, because we, you know, that's the evidence of calling. I don't think that sort of works out, really. But Dave likes being in Wiltshire, and Carol likes being in Wiltshire as well, but it's part of the deal, I think. I mean, I do. I love being in Wiltshire. But I'm not here in Wiltshire because I love being in Wiltshire. I know that I'm called. There's a purpose and something going on. Now, I want to just give it another little framework here and then try and look into where we're at a little bit now. One of the things that happened for me in this process with the trees was that I was actually planting little acorns and all those sorts of tree seeds in pots at home. And in fact, my family had got to the point where, oh, that's just Dad's thing. And I was growing these little seedlings. And I really didn't know what I was going to do with them. But there was a morning when we were worshipping in Dayspring, and I suddenly realised what I've got to do with them. I've got to plant them out over the whole of Wiltshire and into different places. And so we started as a church to sort of grab a hold of that and say, okay, well, we've got all these other prophetic words about Wiltshire, and here's somebody saying, well, we ought to, you know, sort of plant these things out. So we did little forays into all sorts of different places, and we even grid referenced them and stuff like that. If you ask me for that information, I'm not quite exactly sure it was. And we did have an ordnance survey map, four ordnance survey maps that we cut together and pasted together and literally dotted on where we thought we'd been planting the trees. And of course, we didn't just go plant the tree and then come home, but we were obviously praying and prophesying over the whole of the county whilst we were doing that. Now, that went on for quite some time, but, you know, after a while we sort of left that in a way, left it alone. We haven't really always revisited it. And yet, somewhere in the background, those trees, possibly some of them are growing. People do ask us, are they growing? Have you checked on them? Yes and no is the answer. Mostly no, I think, of checking on them. And some of them will have grown and some of them will have been cut down, I should think, and or whatever. You know, that's not really the issue. The issue was that we went out and we sort of planted these things. Now, the other thing that was going on at the time was I was really into bronze casting. And there was a whole range of issues spiritually that came up with bronze casting, not least the Benin bronzes, which we have in the British Museum, that really should be given back to Benin, where we stole them. Our army went in and just basically pillaged the place and ripped these fabulous bronzes and nicked them and brought them back, and they're now in the British Museum, and there's a whole issue, rather like the Elgin marbles. That could be a justice issue, we'll leave that on one side, but I was into this bronze casting thing, and I had a project which sort of linked with my school at the time in Ridgeway in Rorton, about doing a casting for putting on the top of Liddington Hill, which is the high place above Swindon. Now, it's not a good story, because I tried my best to do the thing, but I didn't really get very far with it, and in the end I didn't manage to do the casting and they had to get somebody else to do it. So it's a bit of a failure story, really. But the thing that I'm left with, and I cannot say to you hand on heart this is true, but I am left with this feeling that at that time, which is around 2002, I think, 2004, there was some issues going on with the churches in Swindon. Where they were having a real struggle and things didn't go very well. And it was sort of just after the whole thing about, you know, me doing this bronze casting thing and it wasn't working out. And I wonder whether the thought I have is, have I failed, really, in praying and prophesying over Swindon enough? Was God calling me to do that sort of thing and initiate that so that the churches would be supported in prayer? And I don't know, I'm left with that, so you can't answer that question. It's an unanswerable question, but it's something that I sort of think about. I do think that situations have changed, so the list of prophecies and stuff that we've had, like the one about putting structures in place for things that don't yet exist. Whilst I was preparing this, I thought this question, that sort of came about 15 years ago or whatever, or maybe a bit more than that. Has the situation now changed? So the prophecy was given 15 years ago, put things in place for things that don't yet exist. Are those things now existing? Is there a situation in which we've been preparing and we actually should be acting? I just thought I'd throw that out as a question for you to have a little think and a pray about, because that could be true, couldn't it? You know, 15 years is a fair bit of time. So what sort of situations and circumstances have changed? Okay, we've had a major financial crash about 4 years ago. It sort of seems to be, you know, that's probably the major change in terms of our lives and whatever, and our hopes and fears and so on, and people around us, of course. Other things have changed within the church. I think we've become much more focused towards lost people matter most. We're doing a lot more stuff about, I think we're much more up together with, or we're getting more up together with, how we're actually going to communicate the gospel to people in a non-pressured, non-dominating sort of way, and rather than expecting them to come to us, we're going to them, and you know, all of that sort of thing. So I think some things have changed along the way there. So anyway, I'll leave that one with you. Here's the thing that I have had a bit of a think about. Last week, whilst we were worshipping, I did tell you that I felt I saw this lump of clay, and I know that Carol said that she mentioned it in the talk last week, sort of about new beginnings and stuff, and it's like this lump of clay is just about to be, or it's just gone onto the potter's wheel, it's perhaps got the first bit of the thumb in, but it's still a lump, and it's not a pot, it's not a cup, it's not a plate, it's not a jug. It's not been made into anything, it's just a lump. And it's like it's the new start. And I wonder if God's actually doing something with us about this at this moment. Is this time? So we've had all of these prophetic words about, and I think they stand, about Wiltshire and stuff. We've gone so far. But is God sort of saying to us, okay, well, you know, there's some more to happen on the journey now. There's a sort of an excitement about that. I tell you how I felt when thinking about this, which might give you a context for it. I felt on Friday morning, I woke up, was thinking about this talk, and I thought to myself, it feels to me like I'm bringing out the crown jewels of Dayspring. Okay, so you imagine, for Britain, the crown jewels, held in a very secure place. Nobody's, you can go look at them. They're really important. It's all about our sovereignty. It's all about who we are as British people. They're really important, the crown jewels, aren't they? And I feel all these prophecies are rather like the crown jewels. And I feel like I'm dusting them off a bit and bringing them out. And we're talking about our crown jewels this morning. It feels a little bit exposing, really, in a way, but it's good to do. That's one of the things I felt like. The other thing I felt like was, there was another image, was, that story where Jesus is down by the pool of Siloam, and there's a guy who's wanting to be healed, and Jesus says, "What do you want?" He says, "Well, I want to get better, but I can't get into the pool, because every time the pool is stirred, nobody will put me in." Yeah, and there's this sense that the pool, the water gets stirred, like the Spirit of God stirs the water up, and then, the first one in gets healed. And I actually feel like with this prophetic word and stuff, these prophetic words about us being a bigger thing and Wiltshire and what we're supposed to do, and of course there are no answers in that, you realise, I do feel like I'm actually poking the pool a bit, and just giving it a bit of a stir. And I'm starting that off by talking about it this morning. That's all I'm doing, is just starting it off. But I think that there's a time now, perhaps, where the prophetic role of Dayspring needs to be stirred up again. So if you feel like let's not be surprised, if you see what I mean, whether you have a dream or you actually begin to feel something, or you're praying or you pray more about it and you begin to feel that God's engaging you in some way. Okay? Now, it could be in any way it is, because as I was talking to Philippa on the way, and we did some talking on the way home. You know there's a 20-minute gap. We're talking about it, and Phil was saying to me, yeah, but different people engage with Dayspring for different reasons. You know, they're not all going to be like me or Dave or Carol and feeling that the Wiltshire thing is solid. I mean, Phil says, yeah, I'm here in Wiltshire because of you, Andy, but I'm also here because Dayspring has got this Isaiah 58 call of to the poor, and that's something that really motivates me. So I know there are other motivations for being part of Dayspring and stuff, but so what? That's great. I'm not saying that's bad, I'm saying that's brilliant. What we need to do is see whether the prophetic stirring up through those motivations as well as to what we should be doing. So I'm just sort of giving it a bit of a poke, if you like, this morning, and giving it a bit of a stir up, because I think that the prophetic element of the church is going to needs to be stirred up, and also we need to move on, and we need to hear what God is saying. And so, you know, the picture that is on the banner with the boy and the father. I looked at that this morning, and I painted it, but I don't remember painting it in that sense of every stroke. But just to the, as you see, the father is there, and the little boy is down there. There was the colour that I did on the background is all that sort of greeny thing, but there was a little bit of white that went round the boy. And I noticed that for the first time this morning. Don't even think I noticed it when I was painting it, if you like. And it just felt to me like, there's the boy, here's the boy, and there's this bit of white there. And I was just thinking, oh. And it's like the Holy Spirit is coming around us. And I know that's, it's out on the extreme, but I'm just saying, I think the Holy Spirit is upon us, prophetically. Let's get into it. Let's see what God is doing, because we are on a journey. Okay, so our history is these prophetic words that Hugh Osgood has said, and all these other guys have said. That's part of our church history, if you like, and it's set us up in a way, and it is our crown jewels. It does set our values up, and where we're going, and how we see ourselves. and it does give us a context. So when you say, when we say Cabaret Connections and how do we operate with people, where do they come from, are they the people that are your neighbours or are they the people you work with, and where do they live, does it matter where they live? No, because we're into people, not parishes. Do you know what I mean? So you see the prophetic words begin to sort of take effect. So let's see what's next. I do I had another image. Okay, I will tell you this other image. I haven't told anybody else this one, really. But at the same time as having this clay thing, I also had an image like, you know, in, I don't know if you've seen The World at War. It was in the 1970s. It was a program, World at War. There's a lot of black and white footage of Russian and Allied soldiers going into Berlin, for instance. Just, it doesn't matter the city, but basically it was Berlin. And basically Berlin was bombed out, and there was bits of buildings standing, so you got a tall, there were chimney stack perhaps, and then there were arches and stuff, and there's just rubble underneath. And soldiers are walking through, you know, the arches, and they're searching out and just checking the area and stuff. And that's the image I had, okay? And if you were a soldier, let's say you're 18 or 19-year-old soldier at that time, and you're walking through Berlin, and there's just this constant devastation for mile after mile after mile, with dead bodies perhaps, and complete devastation, you would wonder what on earth has happened to the world. Can anything really come out of this? Could anything good really happen after this? Yeah? And you would... probably hope would really be crushed in you, whether it die, I don't know, but hope would really be suffering at that point. And yet, we have hindsight now, so as in 2013, we look back at the Second World War at the end, and we do not see that rubble, but what we do see is that we came out of that. Wherever we were, whether it was Coventry with its bombing, or whether it was other places, you know, around the world, we see that God was there at the time, even though there was huge devastation, but something else has come out of it. And people do look back and say, yes, it was completely devastated, but God, and it felt like God had perhaps left us, but he hadn't. He's there because we can look back and with hindsight and see that something has come out of it, and life has gone on and God has been involved. I don't know if I'm communicating that very well, but that was the sense in this picture of the rubble with the guys walking through the arches, was that they would feel like, God's not around very much. I don't know what's going to happen. This hope is quite thin at the moment. Whereas in actual fact, the reality of it is if you look, you know, if you go 50 years ahead and look back, you actually see that God is there and there is something happening. And I feel a little bit like we're a bit like that in some senses. I don't mean that everything's all rubble. That's not, you know what I mean? But in some senses there is. The hope might be a little bit crushed. But God is here now and he's wanting the prophetic word to sort of spring up among us. So if you do feel that God's speaking to you, I'd really like to know about it, because I've got this book which started in April 2002, it's prayer research, and I've made my notes for today's talk in it, because I've got bits and pieces in there from it, and I'd quite like to sort of continue it. There's still the majority of the book to fill. So, if you'd like me to pray for you about the prophetic and stuff, I won't hit you with the stick. You might like to come and just hold on to the stick and actually expect to be stirred up. Otherwise, I think I'm finished. So, okay.